Welcome to the Julian Ho podcast, where I interview people that are innovative, open-minded, and wholesome. I interview these people because I want to, just like typical podcasters, extract parts of their life, their mindset, so that I can bring valuable tools and techniques to you, the listener. I approach things with a holistic, heartful, and wholesome nature, and I hope to extract that, bring that out with my guests. Today is a very special guest, someone that I probably don't think you'll be able to guess, but it is my twin brother, Nathan Ho. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Really good to be here.
All right. Well, today's style is going to be a little bit more freeform. I'm going to be structuring it based off of holistic areas of our life. These are dimensions: the mental, the physical, the emotional, the social, occupational, and spiritual. So we're just going to categorize this conversation so that we have a bit of structure, and also it'll help Nathan share a bit more insight in a way that's more focused and that can bring value to you. So, to begin, Nathan, why don't you introduce yourself as typically we like to introduce ourselves with our occupation. So why don't you share with us what you do, and then we'll move on from there, because we wear many hats. And so this is one of those. So let's go. Do you do?
So I work for a company called Ezra Coaching, and that is the professional coaching space. You could say I'm a management consultant in regards to helping enterprise organizations across North America really realize their true potential, and that is with the power of coaching. I am vice president of business development across the region in North America, and I love what I do. I'm a certified professional coach myself. I do not do that day to day, but in fact, I'd like to say that I do that, but in other means. So that is playing a bit of a coaching role in the conversations I have with prospective clients, to existing clients, to colleagues all over the world, and really just having that curious mindset to always try to be better every day. And I love what I do.
Yep. You said that twice, which is amazing. When people say that 2, 3, 4 times, they don't even realize, but it's great to hear the passion. And I think it aligns with your purpose. You and I are both coaches, and we love to hold space for people and understand them, see them, hear them, believe in them. So that definitely is a transfer from your other hat that you wear in life, which is just Nathan as a human being. Nathan as a human, how would your friends best describe you? Not your coworkers, different, your friends.
That's a good one. I recently came back from a trip from Hong Kong, and that's where I spent 13 years of my formative years of career and life and all that. And I think when I think of those friends, they would describe me as a shining example of someone who's genuine, authentic, who has his shit together, and great at bringing people together.
A connector, just like me. So you're an international man of mystery, but how about your friends here in Canada? How would they describe you?
I would say similar. I would take out the connector as just because I've only been here now for around 3 years, and I haven't been able to really expanded, 3 versus 13 years. It's hard. You still have that ability to bring people together, but perhaps not so frequent than I had in Hong Kong. But I would say that a lot of people see me here, and friends would say, yeah, authentic, genuine, very happy, and did really well with acclimating to a sort of old slash new place that is Toronto.
Hmm. Well, we were born and raised in Toronto. We lived in the Riverdale area and had a really nice upbringing. Then we went off to Western together, Western Ontario, in London, Ontario. And then from there, stayed in Toronto for about a year, 2 years or so. And then you jetted off to Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting segue into who you are as a brother. And what was it like to be a twin in Toronto? And then from there, what was it like to be a twin starting a life in Hong Kong, all the way across the world? Was it weird to be like so together and then totally apart?
Yeah, that's a good question. Think for anyone who's a twin or even a sibling that gets along with your sibling, I think you can understand the intricacies of sharing space togetherness, but also wanting to create an identity of your own. So you get a lot of great perks, I'd say, about being a sibling and never mind a twin. So I think being a twin takes it, amps it up, amps the siblingness up many notches. So togetherness, meaning you'll never find time really alone. You'll always have someone there for you, someone with you, someone to be with. Always occupied in that sense, which is always good. On the flip side, sometimes you get compared, right? And I think that happens with siblings as well too, definitely. So to answer the question about being together here in Toronto prior to me leaving, there was a bit of both. So there was an enjoyment of having someone always to sort of hang out with. You always find something to do. It's a really good way to cultivate your hobbies and really excel because you're always kind of competitive. But at the same time, you're always kind of striving or taking extra effort to carve out your own path. Because people see you as twins. They see you as brothers, as a package, exactly. So that was life before.
Did that really affect you? Did you really feel like, oh, I don't want to be labeled, you know, the whole brothers and the twins and the same? Because we are fraternal, but we look identical. And we're very similar in stature, height, weight, all that stuff. And so
our voice is the same.
Our voice is the same, as you can tell. Is this Julian speaking or is it Nathan speaking? You don't know. But the comparison thing could lead to competition and lead to an identity crisis and a yearning to develop your uniqueness. Is that a reason why you left?
Well, I think whenever I tell people about my story of why I left, there's always three things. Number one, it is to, first of all, after graduation, a lot of people can attest, I just kind of want to go for a travel and adventure. So that was like number one, explore the world.
Right.
Number two was get a sense of my culture and my background. You know, as we said, grew up here in Toronto in Canada, but it wasn't really an Asian or a Chinese type of a traditional culture. My parents spoke Chinese at home, but you know, we didn't really live the true culture. And most of the times we had, you know, English speaking friends and really embrace the westernized culture. So I wanted to go back and embrace the culture, understand our roots, and also speak the language. Part of that is also to be able to connect with my grandfather, who at the time, you know, he spoke English, but mostly Cantonese, and wanted to understand his story, connect with him as opposed to typical, and a lot of maybe American, Canadian born Chinese will say, oh, every weekend we'll go see our grandparents or uncles and aunts. You kind of wave a hi and say hello and call them by their title or their Chinese title.
Gong gong.
Yep. So, and then that's pretty much it. And then you go off and talk to your siblings in English and
you eat
whatnot.
Dim sum.
So I think that a lot of people listening who live that life can understand that. Even non-Chinese, I'm sure the same as well too, if there's a language barrier. So that's the second reason. And then the third reason I obviously discovered much later, but it goes back to the point of identity. And I think, yes, you're right. I wanted to find out who I was. A lot of times when people ask, they would say, oh, the fact that you left Toronto seemed like a really Julian thing to do. So for folks who know Julian, you know, Julian goes off to Costa Rica. You blaze your own trail. You kind of do your own thing. You've got like
entrepreneurial spirit.
The entrepreneur spirit. You got the tattoos, and maybe not. I'm brushing, you know, with a wide, broad strokes here, but a lot of people would think Nathan's the family guy. He's kind of the one who's going to be in Toronto his whole life, perhaps. Julian's the adventurer and whatnot. And for those who've known us for a long time. So it was a bit of a surprise for some people to say, oh, it's Nathan who's the one who dropped everything and left and went on this adventure where he knew around 5 people in Hong Kong and ended up staying for 13 years. So, yeah.
So from that comparison, did you feel like there was an identity you needed to carve differently and just say like, hey, you know, I'm going to prove those wrong who assumed that or projected that I was less adventurous as Julian? Did you feel like that move to Hong Kong was your way of, you know, showing them, or just, I don't know, what was the MO behind it? Did it feel good?
Yeah, it felt good to blaze my own trail and my own story, but I don't think there was an ounce of I have to get out of the shadows of being a twin.
Any resentment to it?
Yeah, there wasn't that at the time. It was mostly for reason number one and number two.
Okay.
I think number three came about as a realization, reflection after.
Like what? Like right when you landed, or
no? When
three, 4, 5, 10 years?
I would say probably 3-4 years when I got settled and felt like, oh, you know, I'm doing this. Like I'm living and sustaining myself as a life here in Hong Kong. And I think that reinforced that I can be independent. I can be adventurous.
Mm-hmm.
Not to prove myself in that. It's just more of a realization that it was like, oh, cool. Like, you know, I can do this too.
Well, I would say the reason why I decided to stay is because earlier on I found my calling. Luckily, in school, we went for kinesiology. And then I ended up taking a part-time job as a trainer and a gym supervisor. Ended up making money training professors, which was pretty cool. And then I left and went right into the world of fitness. I knew that there was an entrepreneurial spirit in me, as opposed to going into physiotherapy, which is what my original thought process was. I just really enjoyed applying myself physically and athletics and promotion and business and marketing was really exciting, especially since fitness was booming at the time. And that kept me in Toronto. So I knew what I wanted and I went for it right away. And that was a gift. But correct me if I'm wrong, you didn't really find your thing. Hence, Hong Kong was another place to explore yourself and figure out what your thing was, which became business.
Yeah, you could say that. There's definitely... I didn't envision myself going right away, graduating and knowing I wanted to work in the coffee business.
Which is what you did.
This is what I did. I did that for almost 7 years. So,
but that was because you got a.
I got the introduction, and it was just one of those things that, hey, here's an opportunity
right away in Hong Kong.
Yeah. So
you gotta make money while you're there.
Definitely, I can agree that I didn't find my calling as soon as you did, mm-hmm. right? And yeah, it was just something that came to me, and I loved it. I embraced it, and it was more so, as you said, business is something that I kind of figured that out. That was more of my calling. But question to you is, how did you feel about when our friends might say, "Oh, how's Nathan doing in Hong Kong?" Or do you feel that, hey, how come you didn't go off and travel? Did anyone ever ask you that?
Actually, no one did. I think they just knew that I was already super focused on what I wanted. And I was that type of guy, well, comparing my brother and I would know exactly what toy I wanted at Toys R Us when we got a chance to go, you know, shopping as kids. And my brother always took his time to figure out what he wanted, and maybe a different color or whatnot or something like that. So I always knew what I wanted. When I think about Nathan going, first we thought after maybe 6 months, oh, he'll be back. But then that went over to a year, and then a year and a half, and then 2 years. And then when we decided as a family to go visit, that became a reality check that, oh, he's not coming back. He's going to stay here. And actually, it became a cool vacation. Someone to hang out with, someone to show me around Hong Kong. And so it really allowed us to benefit from your connector abilities back then. And
we used to write really long emails for each other. Remember?
Long emails?
Yeah, long emails.
Not calls.
Not really calls, more so long form emails about how we're doing. And I remember we used to think about, oh, this is gonna become a book.
Oh, I totally forgot about that.
There were a lot of emails that we sent every now and then, but they were all long. Oh. And then there was like, I think one day we were talking and we said, yo, this is enough content to be a book.
Oh.
I don't know.
Do you still have those emails? I'm sure if we look back. I'm
sure we do.
Huh. That's cool. Maybe it'd be nice to look at that one day. But this is the first time we're doing an interview together.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. I think at the time when you're in your like post-grad and you're hungry to get a job and, you know, the natural path is to get a career, you very much focus on self. And what's out of sight is out of mind. And so it's not like I didn't have a heart and I wasn't thinking about you. It's just that I was so inundated with proving myself and making it and making money. And without you around, it actually helped create more focus and develop my own friendships and social circles and career. And that was a really fun time. It would have been nice to, of course, have you around, and I'm sure vice versa, but I think being separate helped both of us develop incredibly as individuals, which was actually a really cool decision made by our parents when we were fraught with the decision of elementary school moving into
middle school.
Nathan had scored well in the gifted testings, and I had gotten into an alternative, almost like a Waldorf school, and so we decided to separate. But I still remember this, and I tell this as a story, is I can't remember which teacher, but they said, Mr. and Mrs. Ho, advice for you when thinking about the future of the boys and schools and being together or apart, there's only one president of the school. There's only one athlete of the year. There's only one, who knows, whatever. There's always one. You can't have two presidents and two valedictorians and two. So that became a reality check to my parents. And that also became a premonition, if you will, And so when we separated, I went to a school called Riverdale, which was known for its athletics. And then Nathan, you went to Danforth Tech through the gifted program. And we both excelled. We both were high achievers and became presidents of our school, athletes of the year, captains of soccer teams, and valedictorians too. So it was actually quite the game changer for us to be separated. And we didn't really mind it. I think my parents had, our parents had asked, do you mind if Nathan goes to this school? And at that time I was too young. I didn't care. I was like, oh no, it's okay. Didn't really realize it. We were just very happy-go-lucky kids because we'd see each other when we'd come back home anyways and be able to play with each other.
You just said that, no, you said you were also to mom and dad said, oh, in terms of gifted and stuff, it's like, oh, I'm going to be able to see all my friends, but Nathan can't. He has to make new ones or something.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah. There's like the perception of going into a gifted program means that you have to do extra work.
Yeah.
And I was like, sweet, I don't have to do extra work. Yeah, I can go off and play.
Yeah, it was like that.
So it felt like more of a chore for you, a burden to you, and it felt like a free pass for me to play more. So that was, I mean, that's an interesting kid's point of view, but from the parents, it's totally backwards.
Well, it's like when a kid is too in the zone or just too excited about something, and then, you know, like
there's no
thought process.
No, like, future thinking.
Exactly.
They're not going to think about, oh, well, that's, you know, a loss of my education potential.
Right.
They're just like, real time, right now, I get to have more fun than he does.
Yeah, it's like when kids are just kind of like running and like, ah, 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 okay, I need a break from this game of soccer or hockey or something. Ah, give me a quick drink of Gatorade and or whatever drink, and then I'll go right back out and play, right? It's like that quick moment when it means the world to your parents as a decision, but to the kid, it's like, no, I just want to get back out there playing.
Yes.
Mom, dad, like, give me the water right now, please. drink. Okay, let's go back out there, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, it was one of those types of mindsets, I guess, or lack of mindset.
Yeah, lots of play mindset. Forethinking, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's all right. That's like, I mean, when we look back at all the decisions that we've made, when it influences our brotherhood, I think things have turned out pretty good. I mean, just you're here, you're back here.
Yeah.
So to go full circle on this piece of the conversation, what was it like to decide to come back to Toronto and then live here, move here? What was that?
It was pretty easy. For anyone who wants to travel or do something different than their home, go to Hong Kong in your 20s. Go traveling in your youth when you make mistakes and adventure and there's a lot less on the table, I guess. I say that and probably will reflect back and say, you know, you sound so old saying this, but I think in my 20s and early 30s, a place like Hong Kong was such a playground. It was so lively. You can go out and be out in the town and just live it up. Yeah, all night. And after a while, obviously your preferences change. You realize that this kind of high pace lifestyle is too consuming and not as perhaps meaningful in regards to developing sort of deep relationships and friendships. It becomes a very quick hit of your dopamine to be, you know, quickly satiated with the latest restaurant, event, club, shopping, etc. It's a lot of that. And for me personally, like, some people love it, but for me personally, it just came to a time where it was just too much an overabundance
of material.
Material satisfaction. And for me, because I think I had the roots of knowing what it was like, say, in Toronto or in Canada, I knew what that was. So I wanted to have that as an opportunity. And we always kind of had that as an opportunity to go back. So at the time of my life when I decided to come back to Toronto,
it had already been around, you know, 11, 12 years in Hong Kong. And I knew I wanted to have a family of my own. And I knew at some point in time, you know, Hong Kong wasn't going to be forever. I just had a feeling. I didn't have a plan. I just had a feeling. And around COVID, a lot of us went through the same shared experience where suddenly family means a lot when you're away, even when you're still in the same city, right? We were all separated. We all had to go into our hibernating mode and be cast away into our own apartments, houses, and very little socialization, interaction. And I think it made a lot of people think twice about the relationships they have and which ones they really want to cherish. And of course, family comes first. So with that, being in a place like Hong Kong where COVID restrictions were very, very high, it was easy to think, I need to make more time with my parents and my roots here. So we made that decision and made a plan and relocated back to Toronto in 2021 in the summertime and left everything else kind of behind in Hong Kong and said our goodbyes, and that was it. And now we're here.
Was it hard to reestablish who you are in Toronto, Canada, after you left with such a big part of your identity as Hong Kong?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like repatriating back home, what were the thoughts? I think at the time, the thought about coming back to Canada was, if I say, I thought I would acclimate faster than I actually did, there was a bit of a reverse culture shock. Things had changed in Toronto since I knew it 12, 13 years before. I had come back
a few times,
but that's not the same as living here. So I think the biggest things, and I think some people who may have repatriated home, like the same thing, like I know a lot of people who had gone off like me to an adventure somewhere outside of home and then made their way back, you probably get a sense that living in a place is different than vacationing and coming back for a visit. Biggest things are the in-betweens, like when you are looking to find a apartment to rent, are you suddenly introduced to credit scores after you've never really had that, or paying taxes, and what does it mean to do that here in Canada versus, say, in Hong Kong? So small things like that, but those are big things. Getting your way around. And then also having a partner, my wife, Patty, who's never lived in Toronto either. So again, that was not only for me. Yeah, of course, for me to get back to what it's like in Toronto, but also to have a dependent, you know, your spouse, try to lean on you as well. So you're already on shaky ground yourself, but to have someone lean on you when you're on shaky ground, that makes it even more unstable. So I think that that move back really was a shock to both of us, or for me. So I wouldn't regret it. I don't regret it. I wouldn't say I wouldn't do it. I would say perhaps if I were to redo it, it would maybe, yeah, I don't know, actually. I think either way it would have happened. There's a big change when you're going from Hong Kong life to Toronto life.
From those differences, from a fast-paced Hong Kong, very commerce-based, material-based life, to one that's maybe more spacious, nature-based, slower-paced, did you find that it was challenging to match your pace? Were you like super fast when wanting to get things done in Hong Kong? Like, what was the Nathan identity, the Hong Kong guy, and how was he sort of working through the Toronto?
Well, I would say, I always say to people, when people ask me what's the difference, I say in Hong Kong you get 5 things done in a day, in Toronto you probably get 2. If you're lucky, you get 3. But there are a lot of people who can do 5 things. So I wouldn't put it against the differences, really. I think it's a lot of it is contextual for the person.
So it's not just the environment. I think the people, the person, it really matters. But yeah, I think the pace here was definitely slower. But I also, the biggest thing that I realized coming back here was the diversity, and that may be one thing that, for better or for worse, it gives you more time, or you require more time, because there's different cultures or different ways of life, different thinking that you really need to consider. So therefore things take longer. So that's like one thing. I'd say the other thing that I discovered about myself is really taking stock of like mental health. In Hong Kong, there's a place where it's a bit more taboo. Of course, there's a lot of things happening, but not to the openness, I would say, here in Canada. You know, I have friends and colleagues here who say that I've got multiple therapists or shrinks. You know, it's a very regular thing to have. Whereas in a place like Hong Kong, no one says that. I openly, if anything. And I think maybe now a little bit different, but still very much under wraps. So I think that's something that I noticed that's different. Really pay attention to your own mental health and are more open to it here. Whereas in Hong Kong, I didn't do that as well.
I think the whole world became much more open to it. And there was less stigma against it and a lot more understanding for it and also the value of it. So I feel like the shift has probably changed you quite a bit, because now you're able to contrast your life in Hong Kong and the differences. And so you really now have the skills of someone who's insightful with the East meets West hybridity. It's like an ability. I want to continue on, but I think we should parse this out into parts. So there was part one with my twin brother Nathan, and we got to hear maybe more about the theme that naturally came up, which was identity. I think that's a really important part of understanding who we are, building self-awareness. Because when we have our identity slightly formed, we then align our belief systems to it, the principles that we live by, how we conduct ourselves, and the actions we take on, the behaviors, they all kind of fall under the decision of our identity. So I wanted to take that further into the next part, where we'll cover more of the physical, of who you are, your emotional well-being. We did touch upon occupational and social, but what I'm really interested to chat more about is the spiritual side of your development. Ooh. But that is for part two. So thank you all for listening to this really cool, insightful interview between my twin brother and I. I'll catch you next time in part two.
Pause. It's something. I can't.